Welcome to Curating the Curious, the podcast that celebrates staying curious in life and never settling into a box. Hosted by former elementary teacher, television actress, LA realtor, wine slinger, salesperson, waitress, family photographer, and forever student of life, me, Leanna Ezzelini. Today we have my friend Zoe Wittering, and after listening back to this, I feel like my voice is one big loud American freight train. She has the most calming presence, calming, sweet voice, and then every time I come in to talk, I feel like it's just like a wrecking ball coming into wrecking. But really, I loved talking to Zoe. She's now taught two flock classes that are available. One on mindful mini films, which we talk about a lot. And then another, the magic of multiples, multiple exposure class that she taught after we did this interview. Both of those links will be in the show notes. And one of the things that I really loved about this talk with Zoe was how we explored the ways that being creative can be used as therapy. And how becoming more slow and intentional with your work can also bring you to a place of calm and more balance in your life. But my number one favorite part about this talk is when we discuss how art and creativity is in everything that you do. And everybody is creative. Everybody has it in them. And it's just a beautiful reminder that creativity is something that we're all born with. You just have to use it. First, you have to recognize it, and then you have to use it. Before we head into this interview, I just wanted to share a quick story about a conversation I was having with a group of photographers this week. And one of the ladies was talking about imposter syndrome and how she's feeling fear to take these steps to do these things because she feels like an imposter. Like, who am I to be doing this? Who am I to say that this is what I do? And I heard something recently from Seth Godin that really stuck with me. And he said, we're all imposters until we do it. Until we do it so many times that we're not an imposter anymore. So yeah, everybody feels like an imposter when they first begin something. Everybody feels that fear. But the only way you're going to not feel like an imposter is to do that thing so many times that you no longer feel like an imposter. So it kind of answers itself, but I loved the truth and simplicity of it all. Everybody feels like a freaking imposter when they first start something. You're not special for feeling that way. We all feel it. I still feel it when I say I have a podcast. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so weird for me to say that. But if you just keep saying it, if you just keep doing it, that's when the imposter syndrome goes away. So in order to get used to something, you just have to do it. It's as simple as that. Scared to do self-portraits? Do them. So I wanted to share that. I know it's kind of simplistic, but honestly, it is the truth. And I think it's the best response to what you should do about imposter syndrome that I've heard in a very long time. So I wanted to share that. We are all imposters. We're all imposters, just trying to make it work and trying new things and going for it. And that's what life's about. Just keep being an imposter until you feel like you're not an imposter anymore. In my personal opinion, if your intentions are true and you know what your intention is and you feel strongly about what you're doing, you don't have to worry about what people think about what you're doing. You don't have to worry if you look like an imposter, if you look like a beginner, if you look like whatever, if your intentions are true. Going back to your true intention of why you started a thing will always get you through that scary stuff. Always. Now, if your intentions aren't completely true and you're checking in with yourself and you're feeling like, I might be doing this for the wrong reason, that's a whole different ball of wax. But if your intentions are true, they will get you through. I 100% believe that with all of my heart, and that has gotten me through every fear I've ever had from taking any leap or starting any new venture in my entire life. So that is my gift to you, my advice to you, is that just figure out what your true intentions are. Do they feel true? Do they feel real? Do they feel like something you can stand behind? And if the answer is yes, go for it. Do it. Don't doubt yourself any longer. And now, without further ado, here is my friend Zoe Wittering. The simplicity and calm of your mindful mini film class was just something that stuck with me. And I feel like so many of us needed that so badly at that time because the quarantine had just begun. It was a confusing time and it made me personally feel grounded and calm and not intimidated by the process of making a film, which can be so intimidating for people starting out. So how long have you been making those mindful mini films?
First of all, thank you, because it's always so lovely to hear people say nice stuff about your work. About two years ago, I decided I wanted to learn how to make films. And quite quickly, I think I developed the sort of mindful mini film concept as something that I wanted to do. It was something that felt very natural to me to create these little films that just focus on one little thing and as a sort of mindful exercise as well.
It's hard to put it into words, but for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, can you kind of describe a little bit the way your mindful mini films go?
Yeah, I think the sort of basis of it is to create a mini film that lasts about a minute and a half, about one thing or a series of little things that are sort of related as a sort of mindful calming exercise. So I tend to film in quite a high frame rate, for anybody who knows what that means, and for anybody who doesn't because they don't do video, basically it enables you to slow down the footage in the edit. So I sort of focus on one thing and then slow the footage down, put sort of quite calming music, I think, most of the time to these little films. And the idea is to just create, as I said, a little film that lasts a minute and a half, where people just sort of focus on this one thing and see the movement slowly going. And it's just a moment of calm and peace for people, I think. And I tend to use my subject matters for these films quite a lot of the time. It's nature. So the outside, the garden, washing lines, tablecloths fluttering in the breeze, flowers. Yeah, just and to make people sort of realize that we're surrounded by beauty, you know, wherever we are. And it doesn't have to be a big thing. You know, something beautiful can just be something very small. It can be a pencil sharpener. It can be a curtain fluttering in the breeze. And actually, I think once we get in the mindset of looking for these little moments, we feel calmer as well.
I'm calm just listening to you talk about it. Seriously. It's just, and this is the way your class was too. I remember just being in awe of it. And it's just the most beautiful thing. And for anybody who wants to see it, it's actually available on Flock Plus now, which is great.
Yeah, that was so exciting.
Yeah. And I bet people can use that right now to just kind of concentrate on something positive and calm and good. So I highly recommend it. So I came up with the name Curating the Curious because I believe that curious people who are always hungry for more in life and constantly searching to grow are the most interesting people in the world. And you once studied law and worked as a corporate lawyer for about 10 years. You've been published as a street and travel photographer and exhibited your work in Moscow. You've lived in Russia and France, and you've traveled with Photographers Without Borders to Ukraine to document a charity supporting children with cancer, among many other charities that you work with, all the while having and raising 4 children.
Yeah.
So that is what I call living a curious life. Wow. Tell me more about this.
Blimey. When you say it like that, I'm like, wow, gosh, she sounds amazing.
You are amazing.
Yeah, so I went to university, as you probably worked out. I studied law and French, and it was sort of strange because I think it wasn't actually a burning desire to become a lawyer at all. It was more that just that I'd always had good grades at school, and so I was sort of pushed into this. So, you know, you could do this. And I was like, yeah, okay, why not? You know, it sounds quite interesting. And then you get sort of a little bit on the treadmill. And so, yeah, I worked for 10 years as a corporate lawyer in Europe, and I think quite probably quite quickly realized that it wasn't actually my dream job. It wasn't really what I wanted to be doing. But as anybody here who knows anybody who's a corporate lawyer, it doesn't really give you much time to think about doing anything else. And so actually the opportunity to sort of have a pause and give myself a bit of time to think about something else that I might like to do in life came when I had kids. Quite a lot of people are the same. They sort of get on a bit of a career path and then have children and realize that the career that they've maybe worked towards or had isn't very, doesn't really fit with the way that they perceived they would bring up their children. And I was lucky enough, my husband at the time had a good job, and so I was able to stay at home with the children for a while whilst they were little. But I always knew that I wanted to do something and go back to work. And I suppose, yeah, I love telling people's stories. I'm very curious about people. I love hearing about other people's lives. Obviously, the travel that you've talked about, living in different countries, has helped with that as well, because, you know, when you live in a country, you learn so much more about it than just when you go on holiday. And I've always felt this sort of responsibility, I suppose, as well, to tell the story of people who can't tell their own story, which is where the Photographers Without Borders work comes in and other charitable work that I do, that I sort of feel that I'm lucky, I'm very privileged. I had a privileged upbringing, an education. I've had the opportunity to travel and live in different countries, and I suppose it's my way of sort of, yeah, giving back.
I love that. And I love that you do so much work with charities, volunteer work and charity work. That's always had a really big place in my heart, because my dad was really into doing things like that my whole childhood. And he was also an activist for people in convalescent homes. And I grew up visiting people in convalescent homes whose families had abandoned them and doing things like that. So being of service to others was ingrained in me from a young age, and it always just makes me happy to see people, you know, doing their part, doing that stuff. Yeah. And the fact that you're doing all of these things with four kids blows my mind.
Yeah, but I think, but you know, I think that's part of it as well, is that I'm very conscious that my kids are very privileged as well. And, you know, I want them to grow up thinking that they have a responsibility as well. And also that, yeah, they have a privileged life, but to realize that they are privileged and to make them aware that not everybody has the same luck that they have, and that they should be aware of that in the way that they live their life. Because I think that's, as a parent, that's, for me, very important, that my children are raised to help others as well.
That's beautiful, and that's wonderful. I wish more people thought that way. Before we dig in, I like to start each episode with a few questions, because I've always been obsessed with books and quotes. So tell me the one book that you believe everyone should read and why.
So the one book, I think, is Maya Angelou's autobiography or memoirs, however you like to call it, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, which I think lots of people have probably read, but I've reread, and I think everybody should read this book. It's just, she was such an amazing woman, but the books are, I think, historically insightful and just blow my mind, as the amount that she achieved with her life and her resilience is just extraordinary.
Yes. I love Maya Angelou. I love her. Well, Oprah's one of my favorite people, and you know, she was kind of like her second mother. And yeah. I've listened to Maya Angelou talk so many times, just on podcasts and audiobooks, and I'm embarrassed to admit that I have not read that book, but it's on my list. And I'm so glad that you brought that book up, because I feel like I know what it's about, and I do believe the same. I feel like everybody should read that. And I think that's going to be my next book that I read.
Cool.
I'll check in with you in a couple of weeks, or maybe a month, because I'm a slow reader. Okay, and so tell me, what is your favorite quote?
So my favorite quote is by British actress Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, I already know it, and this is one of my favorites. Okay.
So it's quite a long quote, so here goes. I think everything in life is art. What you do, how you dress, the way you love someone, and how you talk, your smile and your personality, what you believe in, and all your dreams, the way you drink your tea, how you decorate your house or party, your grocery list, the food you make, how your writing looks, and the way you feel. Life is art.
Yes. Oh, I love that one. And it's so true.
It is true. And I think, and that's a quote actually that I think of a lot when I do my mindful mini films.
I can tell.
It's just, you know, when you need, when I'm looking for inspiration, it's just like everything is inspiration, you know?
Yep. You did a mini film of a pencil sharpener and it was amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, it's just, yeah, this encompasses everything that I feel about what I've seen from your work. And I wish more people understood this because I feel like, you know, people think that some people aren't creative. Oh, I'm not creative. I'm not artistic. But everybody has it in them. They just don't quite realize it sometimes. Yeah. But everything we do involves art.
Yeah, everything. And I think actually, I mean, I think it was Picasso that said, you know, that his greatest hurdle was to remember how to draw as a child or something like that. He has a quote to that. And I think that the sadness is actually that everybody is creative and children are massively creative. And little by little,
we lose it.
Tends to get knocked out of a lot of people, sadly, or buried somewhere. And
and
it sort of takes confidence and courage and maybe a bit of luck as well to pull it out. But I think everybody, everybody's got it in them.
That's so true. Oh, I'm so glad that you read that quote because that's amazing. And this is the section where we talk about the struggles you've been through that brought you to a turning point in your life. And I added this into the show because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I'm involved with social media, and a lot of it entails people talking about all that they're currently doing and accomplishing and promoting, which is awesome and I love it. And I wholeheartedly believe we should all celebrate our wins. But sometimes listening to all of that, I think, can lead people to play the comparison game and forget that there's always a journey before that story. And everybody's going through their own struggles. Everybody's gone through their own journey. And I think it's really important to keep in mind that we all pay our dues and we all go through these times to get where we are. So tell me your story.
You know, I find this quite difficult because I'm, I think by nature, quite a positive person. And this isn't to say that I haven't been through struggles, which we'll come on to, but I still, you know, despite the struggles and stuff, I still do believe that I'm massively privileged and lucky to be where I am. And I think in a way that sort of, it can help when you're going through a bad time to be quite positive, but it also means that when the bad times come, when you're naturally quite positive and then suddenly you're not anymore, it can all go quite black.
Yeah.
I think I've probably had two phases of my life that were the most difficult. My teens were quite difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't particularly happy. I think outwardly it didn't show at all, but internally I was quite unhappy and struggled with lots of things during my teenage years.
Me too.
And then about 4 years ago, my marriage broke up, and that was something that I wasn't expecting to happen. It wasn't in my life plan, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And I think I, coming from a place of having been brought up in a certain way with parents who are still together and obviously with four children as well, it was a time that for me was very difficult to accept that I was not going to be married anymore and I was going to be a single mum of four children. And despite the fact that we live in, you know, we're now in 2020, I still felt a massive amount of stigma around the fact that my marriage had fallen apart and that I was going to be a single mum. And I found that very strange because it was in complete battle with how I am in terms of, you know, I was brought up as, I sort of don't really like the term feminist because people have quite a sort of stereotype of who a feminist is. But I was definitely brought up, you know, that women and men are equal and these things are fine. But I found it incredibly difficult as a woman, as a mother, to deal with the fact that my marriage had fallen apart and that I was going to be a single mum. And it knocked me for six in a way that I just wasn't expecting.
Right. Did that kind of bring you into doing your mindful mini films, or were you already doing them?
No, that was it. That was the sort of trigger for it, definitely.
Really?
Yeah.
So that was kind of your therapy of getting through that time?
Yeah, it was definitely a sort of, right, each day I just need to focus on one little thing that's nice and good. And when I first started, actually, the Mindful Mini Films came a little bit after learning to make films, because what I did for one summer a few years ago was filmed my kids every day. I just made a little film of my kids and just thought, you know, we'll just have this little summer of niceness. So, and part of it was, I think, as well, just I sort of suffer a bit with the seasons going, we're heading towards autumn and winter, and I much prefer summer and, you know, sunshine and lots of light. And I sort of wanted to create these little films of the summer, so that during the winter I thought, well, if I get a bit down during the winter, I can relook at these films and, you know, I'll have sort of saved all these memories of my kids. And what sort of happened was that my kids are, you know, my girls are teenagers and stuff, and quite quickly they got a bit sick of the idea that I was going to be filming them every day.
Yeah.
And I started just focusing on other stuff, you know, like, yeah, you know, the water in the pool and the washing line and leaves and stuff. And then actually realised that putting these little films together, that that actually was giving me just as much joy. It was, you know, and it was, and it was easier to share those kind of films for me as well, because, you know, my kids, as I said, my girls are teenagers, so they don't really want me sharing loads of stuff about them all the time.
Right.
And so, you know, the sort of little mindful films was easier to share and send to other people.
Oh, wow. So this thing that that led me to you, that is so powerful that you do, once started as kind of like just your way of actually pivoting. Because you found that one thing that you were doing with filming your kids wasn't quite working anymore. You had to pivot and find a new way to get your creative therapy. And now it turned into this whole beautiful thing that you're doing, which I love seeing the way that something tough can, somebody can take that and form it into a beautiful form of therapy or a beautiful thing to share with the world. So I love this example.
And it, what's interesting actually was because, so yeah, as I said, a couple of years ago, I used it, became my sort of crutch, I suppose, in a way, to get through a time. And then this year, when we went into lockdown, we were told on the Thursday evening that schools were going to close. And on the Friday morning, I just picked up my camera and put it into video mode and was like, I just need to make a little film. I don't know what's going on in the world. I don't know, you know, how long this is going to last. I don't understand anything, but I just need to make a little film. And then we went, we had quite a strict lockdown for about 2 months where we, the only reason we could leave the house was to go and get essential shopping. And so everything else was closed and we could go out for exercise, but only within a kilometre radius of our house once a day.
Oh my gosh.
And so for the 70 days that we were in lockdown like that, I made a film every day. And it, without really sort of thinking about what I was doing, it was only afterwards that I was like, yeah, I just, it was my sort of automatic reaction to this sort of awfulness was, I'll just make a little film every day that I put on Facebook.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that, Zoe. So now that we know what road led you to where you are today, I want to get more into what drives you and keeps your creative juices flowing, because I feel like so many people out there, no matter what art form you're involved in, you're always looking for ways to get those juices flowing. So I know you have a love for using personal projects for learning and exploring and playing. Tell me about what you do to keep things fresh and playful.
I think it all comes back to, well, the name of your podcast is sort of perfect for me, I think, in that I'm massively curious. I love learning. I love finding out about people, cultures, art, you know, galleries, exhibitions and stuff. I love music as well. I love going to concerts. So I suppose a part of my inspiration comes from that, which is sort of just a natural thing that I love doing. And yeah, I just, and also the quote that I said from Helena Bonham Carter, I just think that I seem to have this ability to find beauty everywhere.
Yeah.
I think everybody has. I think we tend to live lives that are so busy that we just don't have the time to stop and look at it and see. And
exactly.
And also to just accept that it's little things and
right,
you know, bits of light or bits of movement or a color, that's enough. that's all we need, you know. Like you were saying on social media, I think if you spend too long on social media, you get conditioned into the idea that you need to have these fabulous things or go to fabulous places to have a great life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I mean, for most of us, it's just not realistic anyway, but it's just also not true, you know, I think.
It's not. It's right there under your nose all along.
Yeah.
And what personal projects do you do to keep yourself going?
At the moment, I'm photographing teenagers.
So how did that project come about?
I sort of went back to film a couple of years ago, sort of in and out. I mean, I shoot digital mainly for work. But I'd had a film camera that I've had for years and years and years and sort of loaded a few films in it a couple of years ago and taken odd things. And then last year when I was quite busy with work, I found that it was easier to take my personal my personal photos on film because it meant I didn't have to do hours of editing and I could just sort of take them and then I'd wait until I'd got sort of four or five films to send off to the lab and get the scans back. And it just meant that I carried on with my personal projects even when I was quite busy with client work.
That's a great idea.
And then I suppose then I sort of slowly realised that the film work or the photos that I took on film had a sort of special connection to me. I think there's an element to, I mean, digital is fantastic because it's made photography so much more accessible to so many people. But the downfall of it is that we tend to take thousands of photographs that, A, we do nothing with.
Yeah, oh gosh, tell me about it.
We take thousands of photos sort of thinking, oh, well, I can change this afterwards. Mm-hmm. Or I can, you know, we sort of don't, we just become too quick with it. Well, I had anyway. And I noticed with film that I really slow down because it's like, okay, I've only got sort of 24, 36 frames. And so I'll check my framing. I think about my composition and I sort of stall before I take the photo thinking, do I really want to take this photo? Why am I taking it? And so the whole process was a much slower process. And yeah, for the photographing teenagers, I think part of it's maybe the sort of nostalgia element for me of wanting to use the time that I'm with them to sort of talk to them as well. So the slowness
right.
sort of goes with it. And just it's sort of a different element, I suppose, as well.
Yeah. And I love that because you're being intentional with what you're doing instead of with digital. I feel like sometimes we just kind of shoot off 1,000 pictures, but with film, you have to be intentional and mindful.
Yeah. And I think I had a tendency with digital of, you know, if you're taking a portrait of somebody, you just sort of click away, click away, click away, and then have a bit of a chat and click away, click away. Whereas with film, as you said, I'm so intentional with it and I'm so limited with the frames. It's like, no, well, chat first. And so I properly chat as well. I feel as though I did. I mean, I think I probably properly chat with digital as well, but it doesn't feel the same. It feels more intentional, more slow. And I like that. I think it's something that I feel as though the experience is better for the other person, but also for me as well. And so I'm calmer and I enjoy the process much more.
I feel like I need to try this. I need to slow down and calm. This is very inspiring for me.
And then I think the other thing is when you get this, because there's a delay then as well until you get your scans, I feel so sort of protective over those photos. When I get them and see my scans, I'm like, oh, but I sort of can't share them straight away. I have to sort of sit with them and they're mine and they're, it feels so much more personal. It feels as though there's so much more of me in those photos, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
Which is funny.
I love that. That's really interesting too. I've wanted to do that for a long time, get into the whole film camera thing. But again, it's a little intimidating, time consuming. You don't know where to begin. What would be the best and easiest way for someone to kind of dip their toes in and start easy?
I had a Nikon film camera that I've had for years and years and years. And I tend to overexpose because film really likes light and it's really hard to overexpose your highlights on it. So I just tend to overexpose and sort of, I just try things really.
And how did you decide which camera you would start with? Did you start with just like, Could I go on Amazon and just get like a little film camera or?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon have them or eBay have lots of resources as well. And there's a lady on Instagram, Melise Miller, who I follow, who is a great source of information on film and film cameras. And she has information on light meters and stuff like that. I'm not quite there yet, and medium format and all sorts of stuff. I mean, the real problem is it's like lots of these things, you sort of start and think, oh, you know, that would be really great, and then you sort of get into it and you start reading more and more and it's like, oh, I want to do that and I want to do medium format and I'm like, oh.
I know, it's endless.
Yeah.
So I've loved learning all of these interesting things about you. And what does living a life of curiosity mean to you?
I think it means forever striving to understand more, to learn more, to ask questions, to never sort of sit back and think, yeah, I'm okay. It's to just keep asking questions, to keep learning.
Yep.
About everything and not accept things, because I think with everything that's going on in the US at the moment with the Black Lives Matters,
mm-hmm.
Has taught us a massive lesson that we should ask questions always.
Right.
Just not accept what we're told, but we need to keep asking questions and do our own work to work out whether what we think about things.
You're so right. And yeah, that's been the biggest thing in my mind during all of this too, thinking like, gosh, the people that won't open up to it, how could you just shut your mind off to something that needs fixing so badly? Why won't you open your mind? You know, read White Fragility, read Cast, something. Yeah, you're so right.
And there's so much out there.
Yes.
Information out there now.
Right. And I try to open my mind to both sides so that I don't want to be someone who is shut off.
Yeah.
And I try, but I wish there were more people that could open their mind and hear both sides instead of reacting so emotionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said that beautifully. I love it. So sadly, it is time to wrap it up. But before we go, I want you to tell us what you're working on right now, where we can find you.
Yeah, so well, you can find me on Instagram at Zoe Wittering. I'm on Facebook as well, Zoe Wittering Film and Photography. And my website, obviously, which is zoewittering.com. I've also just launched an online retreat, but it's in French, so that's mainly aimed at...
Darn it.
French photographers. And then over the winter, I'm hoping to probably late winter, early spring, I'm hopefully going to do some more video tutorials.
Oh, good.
As well, in English.
Oh, good. And I'll put that in the show notes so anybody can find it. And your class is also available at Flock Plus, too. So
yeah, making mindful films. Yeah.
That was great. I had so much fun talking to you, Zoe.
Me too, Leanna. It's been so lovely. So lovely to talk to you.
I loved every minute and I feel inspired and calm.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I've just finished editing this and hopefully I've done enough so that every time my voice comes on, I don't blow your eardrums out. She just has the softest, most gentlest voice in the world. And my freight train of a voice is really cracking me up during this. But hopefully you enjoyed listening to Zoe as much as I did. And if you did enjoy it, please tag us on Instagram. Screenshot it, tag us, and tell us. And as always, subscribe, rate, and review. If you do get anything out of this podcast, the best way to say thank you is to subscribe, rate, and review. From what I've been told, that's the way that more people get to find out about this little podcast. So that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I will see you next week. In the meantime, stay curious.